started. It is Tuesday, July 7th at 6:02 p.m. and we are meeting in the Cedar Hills Community Center. And the item on our agenda for the work session is the Utopia Fire presentation by Roger Timmerman. So Roger, I will turn the time over to you.
Great. Thanks for having us again. Just for, by way of introductions, since we have recognized us through our masks, I'm Roger Timmerman, the Executive Director at Utopia. This is Kim McKinley, she's our Chief Marketing Officer, and Laurie Harvey is our CFO, Planning Grants. So I appreciate them being here, so I may defer to them for some of the parts of the presentation or any questions. But anyways, we've talked before, so I've skipped about 60 slides. It's actually slide 60. So we can go back. If you have questions, you don't remember exactly what we talked to at this point, you can go back to that. But I want to kind of quickly jump into where we're at, and then we can go back if we need to. So what we've basically done is that we're proposing a partnership with the city, and then we'll jump into the survey results. That's like the main focus for today. But the partnership that we're talking about is one that we've been doing in other cities. We've done this for Morgan City, for half of Clayton, for half of Payson, for West Point. We've got some others in the queue that haven't announced yet. And in this structure, what we do is we finance that. We use the Utah Infrastructure Agency, which is kind of a sister agency to Utopia, kind of the phase two. The nice thing is Utopia, or UIA, actually has really good history. All of his projects have been successful, they're all paying for themselves. But anyways, UIA comes in and finances the project. So it takes on the debt and pays off the debt. It receives a portion of the fees to cover its operating expenses as well. And it basically takes care of everything turnkey. So the city doesn't really need to do anything other than, and I have the right side of this, there's a services agreement. And I say it's based on a 40% take rate. Really, it's based on the dollars of the financing cost on a recurring basis for the term of the financing. So what that equates to is essentially a take rate. If you have 40% and you sign up, and there's enough money coming into the system to pay for the expenses of the project. That's based only on residential revenues. So there's a couple of protections in here. We say risk avoidance. One thing is we've shown lots of other projects that have been successful. But there's also these other buffers into this. One of them is that any revenue from the city itself buffers against that. So we should basically say, we can't give you services for free. Now there's some legal prohibitions on that. But we can give you a really good deal and give you really awesome upgrades. But 100% of that money acts as a buffer for that risk. And it accumulates before the obligation actually starts. Any business revenue that comes in, so anything over there by the Walmart and that space, and anything that's not residential. So if we provide connections to wireless towers, churches, schools, those are all considered business, and they cost a little more for that service. And that also offsets the risk. So if we were getting $1,000 a month from a tower, for example, that offsets about 33 residential homes. There's a benefit to that. So your effective take rate obligation is actually lower than 40%. All technology trends, revenues from 5G, all the stuff out there just points to more and more demand for this. Obviously, the coronavirus thing kind of blindsided us all, but that's actually been really good for the demand for fiber. So we have a lot of people who work from home, educating from home, and need good connectivity for that. So we've seen demand skyrocket. When we met last year, we were probably 400 or 500 signups a month, 5 months with 1,100. Last month was 900 and something. So the demand is, people need this for the situation we're in right now. But I wish we could get built next month. This takes some time though. We'll talk about that. And then anything else that comes in over time helps. And so over time, the risk gap actually increased. Everybody else raises rates either because of increasing costs or just inflation. But this is a finance thing, you're tied to financing, and that doesn't ever go up over the full term. So actually your effective risk into this decreases over time. Okay, so let's get into the proposal. Let me say, well, what are the other benefits? I mean, why are we even talking about this? Why is the city involved? The structure basically says the whole thing will pay for itself. We don't expect this to cost the city a dollar, but we do need a partnership with you for the mechanism for financing and for getting good rates and all of that. And we're interlocal, we're not a government, or a business, we're governmental partnership and all that. So this is kind of the way we finance things. And then the benefits, here are just a few of the benefits. I mean, I got slides and slides full of benefits, but it's just a quick summary. We're here and we're going to save the residents of the city a lot of money. We're going to increase the property values. We're going to protect net neutrality. We're going to, you know, help eliminate the digital divide, meaning you're not going to have higher income areas get cherry picked over lower income or rentals or things like that. And this is a citywide project. We think everybody should have access to fiber. And it's definitely quality of life. Really, no other project we do from in a municipal space brings such a dramatic benefit economically and the quality of life for so little cost to us. We like parks, we like things like that, but they cost us a lot of money. This brings a lot of benefit that doesn't actually cost us. So, and you know, oh yeah, just, you get all that benefit of cost for taxes or something. Sorry, let me skip over here. Again, this is the structure for the service. This is the minimum service, 250 meg. Cost the end user $65 a month. No installation cost. No contract term. They can sign up for a month and cancel if they want. Very low barrier of entry for people to sign up. That helps us get customers and revenues very quickly. We use this $30 a month portion of that fee to pay for that bond. It's our bond, our debt. We also use that, I mean, that's the primary purpose. We can't use it for anything else until we're covering that. If we exceed that, well, there are other costs. We expect that we're going to be investing $1 million or more over time in addition to the initial cost, because we're not going to just have 40% take rate. We're probably going to have 50%, 60%, or more take rate. We'll pay for all those additional installations, but we use that money to fund for that. And also, when people sign cancel or move, for whatever reason they cancel, we'll go pay for the installation of another customer. But that doesn't increase our revenue, it's just kind of in that neutral position. So there's a few things we use that money for. Retail fee, this is billed by a service provider like X-Mission, Brass, Sumo Fiber. There's just actually 12 of them on the network now. And we get a portion of that revenue to cover our operations. So obviously we're doing repairs, utility locating, upgrades over time, the system's always going to be upgraded and refreshed. So we can use a portion of that, and then they have their portion. That's how you get $65. Okay. This is the actual model for Cedar Hills financially. What happens is we bond for it, but we bond, oh, that's going to have Mark in his life. No, we got here. You want to point here?
Sure.
That's the green laser.
So we issue the bond with 2 years of capitalized interest. So we borrow enough that the interest payments are made by the from the bond proceeds for 2 years. During that 2 years, we revenues start accumulating. So we'll start seeing revenue about month six. Those revenues accumulate. They're restricted. We can't use them. And you can see by year, 2 years in, we're about at $20,000 per month. When the bond payments kick in, the cap high is used up, the bond payments start, and they are, in this situation, about $35,000 per month. So the goal is going to be to get to 40% take rate, which is $40,000 a month. In this period, right here, there's debt service due, but the revenues aren't quite to $35,000 per month. And that's where this accumulated revenue block comes in. We'll use this money to make the shortfall in the debt service payment until the revenues meet or exceed the debt service on the bond. So once you get to $35,000 a month, the debt service is covered. We're expecting 40% after 5 years, and that revenue, as Roger mentioned, would be used to pay for additional take rate, term, and new development. Any questions?
How long is the bond for? How many years?
Most 25 to 27 years.
So it's 25 years of payments, 2 years of capitalized interest,
right.
The contract term 27 years.
Right.
Thank you. Just a couple of points on this. This is an extremely conservative model. We think we get to 40% wait for 5 years. We have all of these other examples we've done where this is actually way worse than all of these other projects we've done. This, you know, this is like, hey, what if it did take us 5 years to get to that 40% take rate? It still has no shortfall. Even though at the 2 year mark, we would have less revenue than we need to cover the debt. So actually we have a really long, you know, runway or period of time or to get to where we need to be. We expect this blue line to clear this, and that's what all of the other projects have been doing, meaning that we had the revenue needed before those debt payments actually came. So just for some context there. Okay, some specific things about Cedar Hills. You're the current Utopia member city. You do have a board position with Utopia. You have existing backbone fiber, so we already have gotten permission from UDOT to use their fiber to get to the city. So a lot of times we come in and say, oh, we got to bake another $1 million or so into this project to pay for some sort of route to get to the city. There's no cost in this model for that because we have a trade balance that we use with UDOT. We build connectivity for them and we trade that. You're not on the hook for the trade side of that. We will come to the table with basically putting that investment in on our own so that we don't have to build a new route. So there's a big benefit to doing that. Also gets us done faster. You actually have some decent business opportunity in that Walmart area. We have a school, an elementary school. We would associate Lone Peak if we do get that revenue off of that school. We do a lot of high schools. So that helps. And any churches, we can do really well with churches.
Lone Peak would count even though it's in Highland?
Yeah, because we're not doing a fiber to the home project in Highland at the time. And so where we would have fiber on the other side of the street, we would just say, and unless, as long as that order comes in before Highland decides to move forward to fiber to the home project, that revenue would come into this project. And then we have, you know, other things that help. We looked at other take rates in other areas. The closest city that we built is Linden, and it has a 57% take rate. Pretty good. Continues to go up. We have the costs are pretty good, and I say there's relatively short frontage distances. So your houses, you know, we looked at other cities. Sometimes those houses are really spread apart from each other, and that's just longer boring and more conduit, more fiber. The houses here are pretty close together, and that's actually really good. So there's some rock, say a little higher cost due to rock, but that short frontage kind of makes up for that. So it's actually pretty good financially for us. We did model out Highland, and it was a lot higher threshold of break even in that city because of that. So community survey. These are the results of the survey. So this is the first question. I said, what do you have? So this was a little bit unique. I've got some bullet points here pointing out things that are not typical. So we saw a lot more cable subscribers than typical. So it doesn't appear that you have any areas with fiber today. Some of the cities we go to have little pockets here and there where there's fiber options. We also see some of the wireless providers do a little bit better, but they're not doing so hot here. You get really low take rate on the DSL. So I'm not sure what that reason is, but it seems that you like high speed more than some other cities, because you do have DSL throughout like most of the city at least, but not many people are actually signing up for it. In really low income cities, we may see higher DSL take rates because they'll pick a cheaper service even if the speed's really lousy. So it's actually very favorable to see that. We do very well at this cable. Okay, next question, what do you have? I think this kind of supports the same sort of thing. And I point this out, since you have especially high subscribership of streaming services. Usually that kind of indicates a younger population. So you see how many people have Amazon Prime Video, Netflix, Disney Plus. That's amazing to see that. That's a brand new service. And almost 70% already have those services. That's actually, we haven't seen that in surveys we've done more recently. So anyways, a very online community here, I guess. That means. What do you pay? So this is one. So that kind of stands out a little bit. You've got a lot of people on the high end here. not very many people want to help with that. So this is sometimes a concern if you have a lot of people who are price conscious. I mean, we want to be relatively price conscious, but it's helpful from a risk perspective to understand that for most people, this is actually going to save money. And so if we start looking at these and say, well, let's cut off at this, you know, these three right here where it's more expensive than Utopia, 36.62% are paying $81 a bar. So for those ones, it's a no-brainer because you're going to get way better service for less money. If you include the tier that includes Utopia pricing, you're at 60%. So if we're a better speed, that's still kind of a better, but no-brainer. But it's you're not really saving people money in that tier, you're just improving their service. But that 60% is really high. What's the download speed of your internet connection? So this is not so great. You know, these speeds are not fantastic. You don't have very few people are thinking that they have 250 meg. I think we got a lot of comments saying, well, they tell me I get this speed, but I'm not actually getting it. But this is I'm trying to put too much commentary in. The results of the survey show that the vast majority of people are in speeds slower than what our slowest option is. So 84% have slower speeds than our slowest option. So our slowest option is 250 meg. It's not slow, right? This would be a significant upgrade. This question kind of ties into that. It says, well, why did you pick the service that you currently have? And the most popular option is because it's the fastest option that I can get. So people do want the high speeds, and they're getting they're picking the thing not because it's the best price or whatever, it's because that's just simply the best speed they can get. Yet when we go back to this, speeds aren't all that hot. So that's all good. I think it's very favorable for this project. This one was a standout. This one is what's called a Net Promoter Score. You probably see this question from when you use some service and you get some emails and say, would you please do a quick survey? And they'll ask this exact question. It has to be this exact wording. And it's, how likely is it that you would recommend blank to a friend or colleague? And whatever that thing is, and you're calculating Net Promoter Score out of that. And in this case, obviously, we're asking, whatever it is that you have, your current internet service provider, how likely are you to recommend it? That's a negative 61, which means that only 8% would recommend that service. And you have some passives that give you a 7 or 8 in that question. They don't count either way. But anybody who's a 6 or lower is a detractor. These people, they do not like what they have. They would not recommend that. This score is really, really bad in any industry. Even in broadband, where people go into providers. I don't have a slide here, it's somewhere else in the presentation, but we annually conduct a third-party Net Promoter Survey, where they ask that question. We're still in the process of the current year one, but the previous year one was 64, positive 64. So, dramatic difference in customer satisfaction for Utopia. But this is worse than normal. I mean, so as we look at other cities, people are especially upset or not happy with what they're having. And if they're not happy in almost every city we can talk to, it's a little worse. Okay, so now we get into kind of political support. See how people think about the city's involvement. Because obviously we have, that's a conversation we need to have, is we may really hate what we have, but do we really think it's the right role of the city to get involved in this? And you'll get criticisms about that. Obviously, we believe it is the proper role of government. We especially like the option that we're coming in and putting in infrastructure that enables the private sector to be competitive. And we're not competing with the private sector, we're a facilitator of that. However, some people are still gonna say, whatever, it's still competitive, and Comcast hates you, and CenturyLink, they think it's competitive because they don't use it. But we actually make it available to them, they just choose not to. So this is kind of seeing where people are at. We've got a couple of questions about what they think the city's involvement should be. So are you supportive of the city actively pursuing additional broadband options? So very, very strong support. They do think the city should have some level of involvement. Let me get a little more specific. We say, well, if you are offered the following options from a fiber broadband provider, what would you sign up for? And this one cuts right to the chase, because these are the utopia fiber price tiers and speeds. Again, they're cut off a little bit, but all these speeds are symmetrical, so it's 250 meg download, 250 meg upload. So when you take the three options that we offer, add those together, you've got 83% saying they would pick utopia fiber option. You got some people, you know, this is probably the most important answer right here, is how many people would just keep what they have. And we ask them, and there's follow-up, and says, well, why? You know, is you're locked into some HOA agreement? Is it simply because of a better price? I mean, that's when in some cities we see that higher, because they say, well, I prefer a $40 DSL connection over a $65 fiber connection. But that's a standout here where people want that higher tier bandwidth. So just to draw a little attention there, this is especially high at Cedar Hills. This is mapped out. I tried to zoom it out enough so I don't reveal any address information. So this is mapped out of those areas. All the greens are someone who picked one of the utopia options, and the reds are those who said they would keep their current service, or those who provided their addresses. And this is just important to see, you know, if there's a pocket somewhere where people are against it, or they have some sort of bulk deal, a really good option. Sometimes we go in there and say, well, maybe this shouldn't be citywide, but this is pretty well spread out. I don't know why no one responded here, but it's not positive or negative.
It's Pleasant Grove.
Oh, that's fine. Well, that explains it. I'm like, I don't understand this. I know fiber design took that into account, but as I was doing the method to do geolocating, it's like, wow, that's great. Thanks for that. Wonderful. Okay, this is back to those political questions. Politically, if they're politically supportive. So are you supportive? Oh, and this compares the model. So we did something a little unique on this survey, because there's been conversation about potentially doing utility model, right? There's several cities who've been talking about just maybe that's a better option. And so this is the first time I actually wanted to dig into that. So first we start with the subscriber model. So are you supportive of the city doing this, where those who sign up pay 65 and those who don't pay nothing? So really strong support for that, 82%. And then we say, are you supportive of the city doing this, where there's a citywide utility fee of $10, but your service fee all in is only $45? And pretty good strong support there, but much less. And I'll show you those side by side here. So those are kind of standing independent. And then we said, let's just directly contrast those two. So this next question says, hey, you got to pick one or the other. If the city is considering those two, after we just explained what those two mean, which option do you prefer? And this was really interesting. We didn't know what to expect. Because we believe that a utility model would actually need to cost more than $10 a month, but we went in with the assumption that's been discussed. And people still prefer the subscriber-only model, even knowing that it would save them $20 a month. So I think that speaks volumes as to people's opinion about the structure that they like. So here's kind of summing that up. So subscriber model, those are the prices. 82% independently support that, which is asked about whether you really like it or not. But when you contrast that directly with the other model, 42.7%. And then on the utility model, less support here, and a little less support here. And so that was something we believed, but we never tested that with a survey. And so it was very interesting to see that held up. Even with that. I mean, here you have 87% saying they're going to sign up for services. You think they'd be really interested in that $20 a month savings. But even with that, those people wanting to sign up, they just don't like being forced into, you know, they see it as a tax. We never talk about it like a tax. It's always just utility. But even then, people don't like that. These are the other projects we've done. I kind of mentioned those. So we've done, generally, a whole bunch of these UIA projects across many cities, $170 million of projects. revenues are about $1.4 million a month, covering about $1.1 million a month in debt payments. So they're in the clear, paying for themselves. None of the cities that have participated in that are paying anything on those. The ones paying on, you know, on the previous $185 million worth of projects are, and that's what you hear from Orem and some of these others. But that was the pre-2009 stuff. Everything after 2009 has been successful. Most of that's here. We did a $23 million project in Lincoln. We broke even on that one 6 months before the debt payments came in. We still had, we had an enormous amount of buffer on that one, but you know, we didn't need it, which is nice. Wilton Hills is a little different. We didn't finance that one. They had accumulated revenues before their project for the purposes of fire network, so they just paid for that one out of their city budget. So that one didn't have a financing component to it. But really good take rate, 70%. Morgan City, we financed that one under UIA, and it broke even about a year early before the debt service came due. Based on city, it was too early. We were still building that one. We were just, I don't know how much more time we had on that one, but we figured probably. And West Point's still really early in the process too. So those are ones that have come online or in the process under this sort of model. But over $200 million of these projects are all paying for themselves. This is about a $6.25 million project. And where you fall under the size of these.
Ours would be about $6.25 million.
So anyways, so with that, you know, we'd say, well, you kind of have the high level terms of a proposal. We formalize that into a contract. Just like we basically the same exact contract we've done with other cities. Sometimes we do that in response to an RFP. We generally, actually, we're surprised by this, but we would recommend the RFP. That's because it gives you that opportunity to say, hey, you know, Comcast, you want to come in here and offer something up that meets these needs? Or CenturyLink, or anyone else out there? You know, it's a legal protection. That's a good, it's good governance and process for cities. And so we recommend you do that, and then we come back with, you know, more formal proposal that captures the terms we've talked about. There's really no surprises from our perspective, but it's a good idea to have that. And then if you do choose us, we sign that agreement, approve it, we finance the project, we build it. We would put in the contract 1.5 years. We think we would be done closer to a year. But you know, we like a little bluffer. So, you know, that gives us plenty of time to get those subscribers, you know, before that 2 year debt service. But if it, that other model we show you, it's actually, that's not really when we need to have the revenue. It's, you know, we have really about a 5 year term before we need to get to the full amount of subscribers. Anyways, that's what I have. There's lots of other material. There's questions to go back to that we've already covered, but I don't want to rehash too much of it.
Do you know of a city that has an existing RFP?
Yeah, a lot of them are issued. So Morgan did one, West Point did one. Obviously, we know we ended up winning those. There's others that have nothing to do with Utopia we could refer you to. We can send you templates, like Palo Alto, California did an RFP that was pretty good, but it had nothing to do with Utopia. It's probably a lot longer than you'd want to issue, but we can give you examples that are like, hey, we didn't write these.
Sure.
But so you don't have to.
But you have to read them.
Bill.
And I don't know if this would be something that you can do for us, or maybe it's better for Charles, but. So I understand you have to have a 40% take rate by end of year 2 to start paying the bond back. Is that correct? Or is it year 5?
So it's a kind of a moving target, right? Like what we need, if we've got revenues coming on before the end of the 2 years, that's banked. It's reserved to cover any shortfall. So if we go in there and say, what we have is basically a very conservative growth saying that if this is 40% take rate, at 2 years, we're only about half that. I mean, we're at like 20% take rate here when that debt service kicks in. So if we're 20% in 2 years, that's fine because we've not made any payments on a bond.
Right.
We've accumulated that buffer And then we continue to see that grow out over 5 years. We expect this to go much faster than that. But the point of this slide is we're really not talking about a 2 year. We're talking about more of a 5 year growth of customers, even though we expect to have them closer to 2 years.
So one of the concerns is always, if we don't hit that 40% take rate, then of course the city has to cover the difference to make the bond payment. So what would be helpful for me would be to have an understanding of what that annual bond payment would be, so we can project, all right, if we're only at 20% or 30%, here's the difference that we need to plan for just in case we don't hit that.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, we had zero customers on the system. It's just over $35,000 a month.
So this one is based on the 6 and a quarter?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, if you go run the financial numbers on the $6.25 million bond over 25 years with 2 years capitalized interest, it's going to come out really close to that number right there. That's what this is all based
on. Have you sent us that slide? This one?
I haven't previously.
Oh, can you send that to
us? Yeah, I'll send you the whole thing. You'll have all the survey results and all the fun everything.
So you're saying project construction about a year from the time you begin?
Officially, a year and a half. So,
if it goes real well.
We'd probably done closer to a year. We have probably half the city done after about 10 months, and then the rest done after a couple months later. We have it in two footprints, basically, one half and the second half in parallel. But there's no writing or lobbying for which one starts first.
Yeah. Mayor, can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
You indicated that if Cedar Hills came online prior to Highland coming online, that we could capture Lone Peak High School.
If they signed up.
Obviously.
We've done very well. I mean, Pleasant Grove schools are on our network, pretty much everything in Aurora. We even have Lehigh schools, although we missed Sky Ridge, but we have mostly elementary schools.
I guess my question is, you saw that kind of spot where no responses were, where it's Pleasant Grove. Well, there's a lot of fluctuation in the terms of what that border looks like. I'm curious, there may be a need to build through that area, just given that future boundary adjustments may make them Cedar Hills at some point. If we do that and we build into Pleasant Grove a portion, and I encourage you to go look at our border. It looks like Captain Hook's coming up into our city. If we were to do that, would that be similar where they would count towards our take rate? And it would change the model a little bit because you're adding, distance of lines and work.
The contract will have a map and it basically say, we're on the hook to make sure that the service is built out and covers all of these addresses. And you're welcome to change that map if you're like, well, we're not quite there yet. We're not annexing or invading.
I hope we're never invading. Have you prepared that map? And obviously it's not here tonight, but is that something you can show us? I'd like to see your assumptions.
I'm trying to think. I know we have the maps to show what we've designed. I mean, our design.
Because you may have already incorporated those Pleasant Grove streets into your model, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'll have to follow up with you and change that. But I mean, what would happen is if we say, hey, this is going to cost another $1 million to build that, but it's going to have corresponding homes and potential revenues coming in from those. So say there's another $1 million to cover another 500 homes or something, just a high-level guess, that would bump us up another $5,000, or about $5,500 for $1 million. And so it doesn't change that we would still want to get 40%, but it just increases both the numerator and the denominator, but the risk is still the same, right? It's more homes, a little bit more cost in the financing of the project.
Right.
So we just want to sit down with you and say, let's make sure that we captured everything that you want captured. And if it happened later, and we say, look, we're just not in a position to commit that those homes should be served from Cedar Hills, but we want to do that at a later phase and add them in, 5 years down the road. We can do that. We just may need to have a little supplemental agreement that says, hey, we do need to adjust your obligation. We probably, very unlikely would we issue a bond specific to that, but we would wrap it into the general UIA financing.
Okay.
The city would have an obligation that we expect to be never paid against. It's just really the structure of this isn't, we don't ever want you to pay a dollar towards this. We need that obligation in fairness to the other cities that are partnering on these projects, right? It doesn't make sense for Orem, for example, to be on the hook for a project in Cedar Hills and vice versa, right? You're not on the hook for anything we've done previously. You get to kind of piggyback off of hundreds of millions of dollars of previous investment. But that's kind of the ask from the UIA side of things, is it's that revenue guarantee.
Councilmember Ellsworth, do you have a question?
Yeah, just a couple of questions. It's just information really for me. I work in IT, so with the whole COVID thing, I've had to go home, and I'm looking for a very pricey just to handle the work that I do. What was the impact of everybody moving the building from home on your network? Did you have to make adjustments of those accounted for in those numbers?
So the beauty of fiber is really, there's no change to the fiber. The only thing we need to do is make some core upgrades to handle the general capacity. The nice thing is we have enormous headroom in our network. So we've doubled the number of customers in the last few years. We've made a lot of upgrades in the network, but relative to the general cost of the construction of the networks, it's really small. It's just, you know, let's take this 40 gig port and upgrade it to 100 gig port. You know, so we have some routers and things like that. It's expensive individually, but you know, to service 30,000 customers is actually not bad. So we've not had any negative impact to our customers, even though there's been a huge increase in demand and usage. And all the networks are designed for peak usage. So the peak hour usage didn't really change a lot. What we saw was a lot more usage during the day, but the peak was when everybody was at home watching TV at between 8 and midnight. That didn't really change much.
Okay. How about the subscriber base? Was that impacted? Did it increase,
Yeah, huge increase in subscribers. Man, we were doing 500-600 a month before coronavirus came in.
Yeah, so I think to put it into perspective, we did close to 6,000 sales last year, and right now at the end of June, we're probably at 50, close to 5,500. So
I'll say last year's entire year.
Yeah, so we're trending pretty well for this year.
And we wondered if it was just going to skyrocket and then go back to normal, but you know, we just wrapped up this last month with 915 new sales, so it's keep the demand for new customers is staying very strong. That's great for us, obviously, because there's revenue associated with that, but you know, this all worked before coronavirus. And now it's even more of a compelling argument. One other thing, just to throw out there, things are a little different in Utah County than they are in other counties with the handling of the CARES Act funds. We have some cities that are basically saying we'd like to provide public Wi-Fi as a lifeline service to public facilities where you know, they have benches and pavilions and other things. There are some cities looking to spend their CARES Act money on fiber infrastructure. If you decided that you want to do that here and we identify some routes, things, you know, even $500,000 or something to get to a whole bunch of facilities where we then install public Wi-Fi as a lifeline for people where they can go use it. That appears to be a perfectly good use of that money. If you don't have another place for that to go, which most cities don't. So this would be a good candidate city for doing some of that. And if we did get $500,000 up front out of that CARES Act money, you know, that affects this. We basically chop out, you know, whatever that obligation would be, because we'd be able to fund it up front. But we'd have to move very quickly on that. You know, that has to be built and completed by December 30th. I don't know why not December 31st, maybe it's a subversion. That's kind of the terms of that CARES Act money. So just an idea to think about with the lower the risk a little bit. And I really don't think the same risk, to be honest, but.
I did have one more question about the survey itself. I remember taking it, I just don't remember that. How long was the survey, what were the dates on the survey? Remember that?
I don't have a date on how.
Do you know if it included like the first couple weeks of March?
I can get back to you on that. I mean, this whole COVID thing, I have no idea, like, relative time.
Right.
So when was the first meeting that we had here? Was that?
I think it did.
Yeah, that's what I was.
It was before.
When it, before.
So the reason why I ask is, I had to switch providers at the time because the one I was using basically went to bump it. Need to switch over to the southern one, which they incurred at a higher price, but they actually are the only one providing the speed I needed to take care of those things. So I'm wondering if that had an impact on the survey, or if this before people discovered working from home, they needed more. I know we kept the survey open over a pretty long time.
Councilmember Ellsworth? Sorry, I can probably give you some context. It was open from late February, early March to late May.
Okay.
It was open for quite some time.
So I think what we're...
There was a period of time there where we weren't, you know, attention got shifted elsewhere and nobody was really pushing the survey to get results. That's why I think you see 200 results.
Yeah.
But it was open during that time.
For the city our size, I think that's an okay number.
Yeah.
My curiosity more leads into people discovering that they need more because whatever their work from home circumstances or school from home circumstances, I know that was a significant problem.
I think it was open more during quarantine than before it.
Okay.
If that gives you any context.
All right.
Perfect. So I do have a question about providing for businesses. So we have a business at home, and Comcast is our provider. They charge us a different rate for internet to our business, the building that our business is in, than to our home. So where does Utopia stand on that when it's a business at home, operated from home? Not just like a home business, like you work for your company from home, but where your business is actually at home.
So there's very rare circumstances where somebody would buy a business connection at home, even if they have a pretty serious business in their home.
Mm-hmm.
That's because the residential service provides the features of what you would usually have to buy a business connection for. So what that includes is a symmetrical connection, right? You get 250 meg, you get that speed down and up.
Right.
And a lot of businesses are like, well, we may be streaming, maybe they're, you know, a YouTube star or something coming. Or they have really critical needs where they need symmetrical connections. And they want unlimited use is another one, right? They don't want to be subject to any congestion or prioritization of different types of traffic. Like, those are all things that are already taken care of in our residential service. Another one is a static IP address. So that's one that a lot of businesses require, and that's an option on our residential service.
With a new provider.
Yeah, you got a specific provider that offers that to residential, but the pricing is residential pricing, not business pricing. So the only time when we have a residential address with a business connection is if, like, Bid and Wireless, for example, is like, hey, we want fiber, and we want to run a wireless ISP from the rooftop of a house. Like, yeah, that's not an appropriate use of a residential connection. We still support that. So there's things like that where running a data center or a wireless ISP, those are like two reasons why buy a connection. But our plans are not, I mean, they're pretty much unlimited and reliable and symmetrical. And so you can have a very, very serious business in your residential home and you just find with our residential services pricing.
Oh, thank you.
Do you have, I mean, thoughts? I mean, is it positive? Is this something you're excited about?
Just from the conversations I've had with other people, nothing might be triggering. It all matches what is in the survey. Nobody's very happy about the upgrade and all that stuff that pops up all the time, especially between 6 and midnight. I watch shows, but I'm really prepared and all that. So this just matches what my conversations have been on the side.
think as well, people are looking for a more reliable connection because of COVID, whether it's because they're working from home or they're concerned about their children. We need to be able to do school from home, and having a reliable internet connection is now probably more important than it has been for a long time. I was just reading through, I was in like on page 7, the Treasury came out with a list of FAQs for the government portion of the CARES Act, and they talk about specifically using fund payments to expand broadband capacity to assist with distance learning and telework, and they say such expenditures would only be permissible if they are necessary for the public health emergency. So they're pretty clear that you couldn't use it to expand.
So we had people look at it, and it basically said, as long as we can provide that service and have it installed by during the emergency, right? So long as it's providing a service by December, then it qualifies. If it was, we're going to build fiber because sometime in the future there's going to be public benefit, that doesn't work. And so it's, you know, to support tele, yeah, there's two things. There's one was telework, and then there's like thing about supporting public employees and their use. So there's a couple of those examples.
Yeah.
And then we got questions back from cities like, wait, what about this? What about this? We've had a lot of people look at that. And it's like, well, this specific project to have working Wi-Fi as a lifeline in public facilities.
Public facilities.
Yeah, we couldn't do it to homes.
I see. Okay.
Like this would just be like, let's take a portion of this project. It could be offset because the purpose wouldn't be fiber to home. It would be public Wi-Fi in public places to serve as a lifeline where people could go. Now, so if you had a park where you have pavilions and benches or any facility where you say, hey, if you can't get, you know, you've either been turned off because of hardship, you know, economic hardship, and you don't have broadband at home, or even if your broadband at home stinks and it's not good enough, you'd be able to offer up your public facilities and say, well, you could go park your car in a parking lot and get good Wi-Fi. And the Wi-Fi we're putting in on these projects is amazing. I mean, obviously it's not good enough to cover a whole city, but it's really, really good within that facility, so you could really have a lot of people benefiting in those places with 500 meg gigabit type speeds over wireless.
So,
yeah, I wish we could pay for the whole thing.
That'd be great. Anything else from staff? Okay, I do like the RFP suggestion, and so we will reach out to Morgan West Point and see if we can get copies of it.
I'll get a copy of it.
Yeah, and we can, I mean, if you're comfortable with it, we can email them to you. It would just be like, we didn't write these. These are
sure.
The ones that you
just
to sear down and put it.
Okay.
Send us over.
All right. Thank
all
you right. Very much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Council, that was the only thing on our work session agenda. You've got about 10 minutes before the meeting. So, let's make a motion to adjourn. We'll have a bit of a break.
I move that we adjourn work session.
Motion made by Councilor Anderson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Councilor Smith. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We're adjourned.